As usual, with my friends, James Peter-Costa and Jason Lewis.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Good morning, Petaluma.
Yes. Good morning, everybody.
Yeah.
It's so morning, isn't it?
Seems like we keep doing this on Friday, like every Friday almost.
Yeah, and it's like usually it's at 11. like that movie Groundhog Day.
Actually, speaking of movies, I saw a really good movie yesterday, Hidden Life.
Ooh.
It was a three-hour movie, and it was about, World War II, but it was about a Catholic that was, would oppose being a conscientious objector. And it was a beautifully done movie because you could see from the beginning and just saw how all the people reacted and how they reacted toward the end. But it's a good movie. I've seen a lot of
hours.
It was 3 hours, but it went by really quick because it was, I thought, the cinematography was fabulous.
Yeah, I don't care how good it is. I would have fallen asleep.
It's too long.
Oh, no. Not
I can't sit that long.
This was beautiful. Yeah. So, I've been actually going to the movies, trying to, catch up on the Oscars and the Golden Globe.
Did you see Knives Out yet?
Yeah.
I loved it.
It was a great movie.
I thought it was great, yeah.
That one I enjoy seeing again and again.
Yeah, was really good.
It was pretty good. Right? Did anybody read, on Next Door about how there was a Republican group that was going to have a meet and greet at Pete's?
No. Yeah. How many people would be there? Like four or five, maybe?
Well, no. I mean, let's have a little bit of respect. Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, there's more of them?
Yeah. And so, I thought it was...
Well, I think it's like 30%.
Well, I thought it was interesting because some of the comments back where there was some group going, oh, well, we need to go and protest. It's like, hello, people. It is a First Amendment right that people can actually meet without other people on Facebook or on Nextdoor saying, we're going to protest. We need to infiltrate and find out who these people are. And so...
Well, they're free to do that, too.
Well, no, absolutely. And so I ended up contacting the guy that sent the Nextdoor out,
mm-hmm.
and we ended up meeting and talking. Mm-hmm. And so...
Sorry, this is the guy organizing the Republican...
It was David. I believe the last name is Taylor. I'm not 100% sure. I think so. And so we ended up meeting down at Acre Coffee. Mm-hmm. And he said, how will I recognize you? So I took a mugshot of myself.
Uh-huh.
And then he said he had a camo MAGA hat on.
Oh, awesome.
And so, wow. But and so.
Where did you meet?
We met at Acre Coffee by the police station. And so we ended up sitting outside for probably about 40 minutes and talking. And mm-hmm. the conversation, I didn't really think we would probably agree on national politics. But I wanted to know what we could agree on in local politics. And so that's what we talked about, local politics. And he's going to mm-hmm. take my transportation tour, he and his wife. And he has an interesting background. He was, I believe, an F-14 pilot, Marine.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been a Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
He moved here from Florida. And it was just interesting learning about his background. Instead of going and saying, I want to protest, maybe you need to go and learn who these people are. Because believe it or not, these are your next-door neighbors. And so it's better to find out who people are and having a conversation. So that's it.
So was it a respectful conversation that you guys had?
No, it was lovely.
Did you say about the board? Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we got into family and it's interesting. He has a son-in-law who is in 79 at the age of 12, left Tehran. Tehran when the Shah was removed.
Mm-hmm.
And so... And the one comment he did say is that his son-in-law lived in San Francisco, so he's liberal, which I always think is interesting when somebody assumes San Francisco in being liberal. And it's kind of us thinking Republican, what that means and what Democrat means also.
It's based on the statistics.
Well, exactly. But we had a really good conversation. I plan on keeping the conversation open and probably sticking to local politics because I know that we have things in common. And let's take away what we don't have in common and move forward,
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because often, political beliefs shape your outlook on local issues as well.
Well,
so it is kind of interesting, because I remember back, I won't even mention the council member, but he didn't really like to talk about his party affiliation, and yet whenever he would vote on certain issues, it was really reflected in his... in his party positions, because he tended to always vote against anything that had to do with the tax or anything that had to do with, there were various there was a gun issue where we the council wanted to draft a resolution on assault weapons, a ban on assault weapons, and he voted against that. So it is interesting sometimes because we do try to think of local and these things being nonpartisan and big issues, but obviously people do have political philosophies, and those do shape decisions on every level.
I have kind of noticed that sometimes Republicans in a local community, they really do care about their neighborhood, and they get involved, and they oppose or support or want to make a project better.
Yeah.
And so I think that's... sometimes I feel as though the local politics is different than the national politics, and this is through observation of people I know and experience.
Yeah, I think that that's... I don't discount that. There's also examples, like, for example, with Dutra.
Right.
I mean, if you looked at who was pro-Dutra and who was opposed, it just sort of did tend to be that way. The people that were less concerned about the environment, that were more concerned about, you know, having more cheap asphalt, supposedly.
Or another argument that somebody just made to me about Dutra was, if Dutra was there, we would have had the river dredged. And so you also have that.
And of course, only Dutra did have a glowing picture of Sarah Palin on her Facebook page. So there are some connections there between local politics.
There are, but I still think you need to reach out and you need to meet people instead of saying, "Hey, I'm going to go ahead and boycott this." There was about 40 people that attended.
Yeah.
And then people were saying, "Well, people called Pete's and wanted Pete's to know what was going on."
Mm-hmm.
Hey, these people go to Pete's.
Sure.
I mean, this is not the first time they've walked into Pete's. So are you supposed to come in with a badge on you, you know, put up, you know, on your arm saying I'm a Republican or a Democrat or whatever you want to be? That is not what this community should be about.
No.
It should be about more respect and inclusiveness and letting people – I think it's really important that people go and listen to other people.
Yeah. It's really hard, though, with Trump, because the guy is so divisive and such a racist, and the guy's been impeached, and he really ought to be removed from office, and it's very difficult when somebody is wearing one of those hats to not take it as an affront. It's
hard. I am not disagreeing.
And they don't see it the same way if I walk around with a Bernie hat or something like that.
That's right.
But objectively, I mean... if you stand back and take a look at the differences, they're pretty profound. I mean, one guy is talking about, you know, saying all kinds of bigoted and racist things and sexist things, and the other guy's talking about peace and health care. You know, I don't know. It's a tough one. But my daughter just had a terrible experience that she got out of because she was living with someone who was a Trump supporter.
Right.
And it turned out that they thought they'd get along because... they just would not talk about the politics stuff. But the problem is what she found out was the reason that she's a Trump supporter is very much related to how she is as a person. And it turned out she was very authoritarian. And so it's really hard to separate these things because it does come down to one's philosophy and outlook on life. But I totally agree.
It's not always that way, though. It's not always.
It isn't always that way, but it's...
My housemate is a Republican.
Yeah.
And we've moved together for 3 years, and...
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's not a Trumpster, though, right?
No, he's not a Trumpster, but he's a Republican.
Different. Yeah. It is different. You know, so there was a time when it was much less divisive, and you didn't have, you know, politicians of one party saying, you know, the other party loves terrorists, for example. I mean, this is
right.
This
it's what was saying today.
Collins made that point that Democrats love terrorists, and that's why they are complaining about this this attack on the Iranian. Soleimani? So it's tricky. But I agree with you in spirit. I mean, because honestly, as humans, we do have much more in common than our differences, and we should focus on those when we can.
Yeah. Okay. And, I mean, maybe somewhere down the line, we may have him on as a guest.
Maybe Jason had it a hard time. No, I mean, I there's people in my life like this. I know what it's like. It's a trick.
Yeah, it is.
We do have a guest, so why don't we go there?
That would be great, because there's a lot we can talk about, but the guests can actually participate in this conversation.
The guests can actually participate in the conversation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
that was a rough 10 minutes.
I thought it was kind of mild and mellow.
It's the usual. Oh, boy. With us today, we have Dave Alden, who's the executive director of Petaluma Urban Chat. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yes.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah. A good radio voice.
I try.
Yes.
Yeah, you could have a show here.
Yeah.
These microphones help.
In fact, yeah, you could have the Urban Chat show.
Somewhere in the future that maybe I'm
going
right now, I'm just glad that I'm now allowed to speak. I've been sat here for 10 minutes listening to this. I'm sad, but nobody knows I'm here.
Well, I was really trying to wedge my way in.
I did see that,
that's
yes.
That's the pattern here.
We still have to work on that, I guess.
Yeah. So, Dave, tell us about Urban Chat. What is it?
Urban Chat is a group that came together about 7 years ago now to talk about really walkable urbanism in Petaluma and how to create land use patterns that are more better prepare us for the future. The four tenets of Urban Chat are housing to meet community needs, which is another way of saying affordable housing, transportation alternatives to reduce car dependency, sustainable municipal finances. You know, the city hall finance issue is real, and how we develop land affects how city hall finances work. And last but certainly not least, climate action.
Okay, those are four good...
I just want to raise one comment about what you said on sustainability and how a community is financed. On Monday at the city council meeting, the discussion is going to be on pensions. Yes. And how... so people really understand what the cost of pensions are, how it works. Instead of just saying pensions are too high, people can actually understand and then make a decision.
I agree completely.
Yeah,
I encourage everyone to be there.
Yeah.
This is the second workshop the city has done on their long-term financial and organizational stability and sustainability effort. At the first meeting, there were two people from the community in the audience at the end of the evening. We need more folks there listening in and learning.
I could not be there that first meeting. It was unfortunate, but I'm going to be at the next, and I think there's a series of eight meetings or something until... March or
it actually runs until May.
Until May, okay.
And at that point, the city council will then move into deciding what kind of revenue measure to put forth, perhaps on the ballot in November. So it's all leading in part, at least partly, it's leading toward that decision.
And I appreciate the fact that we're actually answering the questions of what is the problem with the pensions instead of just hearing the sound bite.
I agree completely.
Yeah. And does this start at 6 or 7? Do you know? I will look it up.
I'm pretty sure it's 6 o'clock.
That's what I was thinking, but I just want to make sure. Because I think it's an important meeting for people to really participate in, either in Granicus, they can get online and watch it, or on TV, or go to the meeting is better.
And for, yeah, I agree the meeting is better, but for those who missed the first workshop and want to get caught up, I highly recommend watching it, particularly the last hour on how Prop 13 was structured and why it is so unfair to Petaluma.
You know, there is going to actually be a meeting that I believe this group of Republicans are putting on, and it's on Prop 13, and it's going to be at the Palms Grill, and I'll look up the date. But I think it's important for people to sign up and go, because what I'd like to do is have, I just want to find out, okay, what is their perspective on this, and is it opposing it or supporting it? I just want to know, and then maybe we want to have a debate on Prop 13, maybe a community debate for people that are supportive of making the changes. And the changes that are being looked at are that corporations such as Disneyland or Chevron that are paying land, that are paying tax dollars for property that are basically paying zero taxes. And that's really hurting our community. And so it would be good to have the discussion about that.
Yeah. And to not necessarily throw, you said, Disney and Chevron under the bus.
Exactly.
The problem is the people in 1978 wrote the proposition badly.
Yeah.
They failed to understand how business properties got transferred.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're now paying the price for it.
That's exactly right. And so I think it's a good discussion for people to start learning, because what's happening is we're asking people to sign petitions to get this on the ballot.
Right.
And so I think it's really important to hear the other side. And I don't know what direction they're going.
Yeah.
So, community and
not segregating yourself out from other people is how you learn.
I agree. Well, I mean, the one thing that came out in that first workshop that just really shocked me, and I don't remember for sure every Marin City involved in this, but of every dollar paid to Marin County in property taxes, Ross, Mill Valley, cities of that sort get 22 cents back from the county. Mm-hmm. Petaluma, of every dollar paid to Sonoma County, gets 11 cents back.
Why is that?
It has to do with how much the tax rates were immediately before Prop 13 passed.
Hmm.
And because Petaluma was going through a growth spurt
exactly.
and had all sorts of other money to come in, they were able to reduce tax rates
right.
temporarily, and Prop 13 then froze it in place.
Because what was happening, the city was growing, and the city was living off each house, and the money that went into the city for that is that's how the city has received their money,
right.
which was detrimental. In the long term.
Detrimental, and especially because of the way the Prop 13 was written,
right.
it somehow assumed growth would go on forever, and that was a nonsensical assumption.
Interesting.
Howard Jarvis should be ashamed
of
himself.
Well, I remember when it passed, and suddenly there were a lot of school supplies that we didn't have, and a lot of field trips where suddenly we had to pay more money for. And
music programs.
Music programs.
Uh-huh. And then these charter schools came, and taking money away from the even though they're public schools, the public school. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So you were a civil engineer for how many years?
Well, I actually still have my license.
What is your background, Dave?
I'm an engineering graduate from the University of California.
Okay.
2 degrees, both bachelor's and master's. Master's in water resources.
Oh, wow.
And I spent 35 years working for consulting firms. And now in semi-retirement, I still work on projects primarily on the land use entitlement side, the permitting, conditional use variants. You know the process.
Yeah.
That takes up part of my time, and then Urban Chat takes up pretty much the rest of it. Urban Chat and then Know Before You Grow, which is the public forum arm of Urban Chat.
Well, I like your, you have a statement here about YIMBY groups. Can you explain YIMBY? Because everybody's familiar with NIMBY, I think.
Yeah, NIMBY
is spelled different.
Well, it's more a positive approach.
It's very positive, and in my mind, too positive.
Yeah.
NIMBY, for anybody who may have missed that, is not in my backyard.
Yeah.
Basically, people who oppose projects primarily because they're in their neighborhood,
right.
rather than having an overall philosophy on land use. YIMBY tries to turn that around. If yes, in my backyard, yes, I'm willing to have a 3-story apartment building directly behind my single family house. And I largely want to agree with them, but the YIMBY movement tends to say, we don't care about environmental, we don't care about access to transit, we don't care about traffic, all that matters to us is housing, and I think that goes too far.
Mm-hmm.
The YIMBY folks will be in favor of the Corona Station project as currently proposed,
right.
and I have a problem with that. So.
Exactly. Yep. Wow. We all have a problem with that one.
Yeah.
The one as proposed.
Not all of us.
Well, it's true.
Yeah.
But you know, I think the for me the real difficult part is the consultant that this consultant has hired, who is a past, you know, city planner. And I look around the city and see all the mess ups, and this is the last person I want being on paid by a consultant to say, hey, this is what you need, because she got up and said, hey, this has been in the general plan since 1962. And I'm thinking, it's not 1962 anymore, honey. It's 2020, and a lot has changed.
I agree completely. But I think that project as proposed would have been that way regardless of whether or not she'd been involved. I think that's just the kind of development that particular developer knows how to build.
But as a planner, you think that you would have come forward and you would have tried to shift it, but she didn't. She went right into the 1962 planning.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So,
what's your take on Rainier?
Not a fan.
Uh-huh. Why?
Well, I mean, let's go back to the four tenants of Urban Chat.
Yeah.
Does it provide much housing for how much money you spend on Rainier?
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah.
Does it break the car dependency mode? Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, in theory, you can ride a bike across Rainier.
But there's already a bike. There's already the Lynch Creek Trail, right?
There's
there.
Other options.
Yeah.
I mean, it would help transit a little bit because it really does connect the transit system up better. Mm-hmm. But those are fairly small benefits.
Yeah.
Climate action, you are probably going to create more vehicles miles traveled. That's a negative.
Yeah.
And financial sustainability, we've now got another $100 million asset that we have to maintain.
Yeah.
I think on balance, it's pretty, my position is pretty heavily against.
Well, I feel as though the city council, what they really need to do is do a master plan of this area. Hmm. Because the public doesn't have a clue of how much traffic is going to be on McDowell. We already have about 200 more big rig trucks going to the post office every day, illegally parking in an area up by Corona Road, crossing Corona illegally. And the city really needs to open their eyes and look at the stuff that's going on and really see and actually take some action. And I met with Peggy Flynn the other day, the city manager, and I brought up a lot of the issues on McDowell of why all these big trucks are getting off at Washington Street. They should be getting off at Old Redwood Highway. And there is nobody at the helm that's taking leadership, but mm-hmm. I think she does. She just has to, you just have to be able to have a conversation with her because they're going to be doing road work on McDowell.
Yeah.
And so the other day I'm driving from Old Redwood Highway going south and I see this huge 52-footer.
Mm-hmm.
It was stuck in the middle of the road because there's a barrier. It's by, it's north of Lagunitas.
Mm-hmm.
And so this truck is completely blocking two lanes. There's a barrier in the middle. And the city has got to address these issues when they do this road improvements or fix the road.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we talked about. And so I'm going to be writing my list of things that I have seen and photos that I've taken and send them to the city and say, these are problems and you guys need to look at this before you start just throwing asphalt on. We need crosswalks because there's a Petaluma Health Center there.
Yeah.
You see people crossing this four lane and it's dangerous.
Yeah.
You go into the post office, they didn't make a wide enough turn lane into the post office. So maybe they could make some of those basic changes and it would make traffic flow better. It's not about making traffic go faster, getting someplace faster. It's really about flowing
mm-hmm.
and making it safer.
Mm-hmm.
And so these big trucks that are getting off at Washington Street need to start getting off at Old Redwood Highway.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why Caltrans always supported Corona as a full interchange because all the big trucks would have gotten off there and they would have not destroyed our local mm-hmm. streets.
Mm-hmm.
And so... that's my part. I do my part by making sure that I send letters to the city
mm-hmm.
and that I'm actually going in there looking for solutions, not trying to stop things. And that goes back to what you said, Dave, about people trying to stop projects. I never tried to stop the Deer Creek project. I tried to make it a better project.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not listen. And now they're retrofitting the project.
Still empty buildings.
Because they're still empty buildings.
Yeah.
And so...
How many years has it been?
Well, and I'll tell you that the noise level has gone up 200%, and the city has got to start addressing this because they cannot just keep moving forward, and that goes back to master planning for Rainier, and because the city has piecemealed everything.
Yeah.
And if you master plan it, then you're going to know, okay, this is what's going to happen. Now let's go ahead and look at the sound.
Yeah.
Let's see the sound study then compared to now.
Well, one thing I wonder about with our general plan is it was made quite a while ago, and we now have a lot of new information about climate change and sea level rise.
Yeah.
And how is that being taken into account in the plan for Rainier? And the development that's planned once Rainier is developed, ostensibly the development is going to have to happen in order to help fund that project
in
the floodplain. But have we looked at new data? Because it's worse than we thought. Scientists are pretty alarmed now.
It's one of the problems with the whole general plan model.
Mm-hmm,
to do an overall city plan that's going to be good for the next 20 years.
Yeah.
In a time when, you know, climate change has evolved incredibly over that 20 years. And, you know, to give...
We always knew it was going to flood there. It's just that we knew that, but climate change caught up to what we knew.
And to give the city manager credit, she has decided to kick off the general plan process earlier than maybe she had planned because she sees the problem, too. I understand there'll be a scoping meeting toward the middle of 2020 to get that process underway.
Well, I think the Warmington thing probably was a real eye-opener for her about how it's easy to get backstabbed as a city manager by a few city council members.
Mm.
And I think that maybe that was a good thing that actually happened.
It could be. I have not visited with the city manager since that happened. So
I'm not sure either, but I just got the feeling that that's true. But I, you know, when we're talking about old plans, when I talked to Peggy also was about Corona, because they keep saying, oh, it's been retrofitted. And I'm thinking, you know what? I know what retrofitting looks like. And usually there's these sleeves that go on around the pillars, to reinforce it, because after the Loma Prieta earthquake, that's what they did with a lot of old overcrossings. And they did that with Petaluma, the old Petaluma River Bridge, before they restructured it. And so I was asking her, so I write this letter to the city, and I'm going, please explain to me, when was this last examined for earthquake proof? So I get this letter back that from 1995. Oh, it was done in 1995. And so I just wrote a letter to the city saying, okay, I would like the whole city council, I want some city staff down there and Caltrans, and I want you to show me what was retrofitted. Because I can't figure it out, because it doesn't look like the other retrofitting we've seen throughout the Bay Area. And so, back to old plans. This is a 1995 plan that the Sonoma County Transportation Authority sends to me, which is something that I actually sent to them. And I get this thing back, and I'm going, this is ridiculous when you're telling me a 1995 plan is okay in 2020. That's the problem with 1962 thinking in 2020. Sorry, Dave. I'm passionate.
No.
I got passion.
So what about development around the SMART train? Do you favor going higher than 5 stories for mixed-use residential retail office?
6 tends to be my number. I'm not sure I hear it much anymore, but there used to be an expectation that once you got above 6 stories, people lost their connection to the street.
Oh, interesting.
They now lived in their unit. When they came downstairs, it was to get in their car and go someplace. But at the 5th or 6th stories, you still know the streets down there. You come down, you walk to a diner instead.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm very content with 6 stories,
mm-hmm.
But I'd want smaller units than we've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, Haystack, which is the project one block away from the one right next to the parcel right next to the train station, has smaller units than many projects in Petaluma, but it's still not small enough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm 66 years old. When I get to 75, let's assume, assuming I'm single at that point, I may not want to drive anymore. I may not be safe on the road. At least by 80, I may not be safe. I'd like to live downtown in a 400-foot studio where I can get to transit. I'm pretty sure that would be a very comfortable life for me.
Yeah.
So we're not building those units. And why not? I'm not unique.
I was disappointed that wasn't a 5-story, because I think it was the first project in, and it would have been perfect. I'm okay with 4 stories because that's what's been approved, so I'll move on from that. But I think that goes back to really looking at height and density.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate the fact that we're really talking about, okay, when we get older, what do we really want to do? Do we need this huge home? Being closer to transit makes sense. I was down in Marin at a party at my cousin's, and we were talking about the SMART train, and I was telling him why I feel as though it is so important. And these people are, they're starting to come to Petaluma from Marin County, so they like to come up here. And that's good for TOT tax.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for the city. So it's kind of like you can live by a rail station and you can still go to different areas, or people can come here. And so I think it's a good finance for the city, more so than the dredging, which brings in boats. But I assure you, SMART train will bring in millions of dollars of revenue versus the boating, which will not. And I am opposed to that D Street Bridge going up until I find, I'm going to be asking the city, when the D Street Bridge goes up, how long is it up for, and how much does it back up traffic now since we have the SMART train? I think it's really dangerous that the city is not even having that conversation. So, there you go.
I mean, I understand your concerns about dredging and the D Street Bridge, and traffic congestion is certainly getting worse on D Street. But I think this town exists, it's where it's at because of the river, and we really should get back to having a river that's more usable than it is
I'm
now.
Not really against dredging.
Yeah.
I just don't like the fact that it's about boaters and the D Street Bridge going up, and nobody is addressing the elephant in the room, which is traffic. If we had the Caulfield connection, then we wouldn't be having this conversation. But we don't, and it's nowhere close to being on the track to being designed and completed.
I'd want to see more numbers, but yeah. I do tend to like Caulfield more than I like Rainier.
Yeah. Well, you get a bigger bang for your buck.
I think so. That would be my intuitive belief, but I'm an engineer.
Yeah.
I don't trust my intuition.
Well, I don't go by intuition. I went by numbers. And I know Corona and Caulfield cost less than Rainier.
Oh, Rainier, cost less.
It's about bang for your buck, I agree with you.
But traffic benefits are the thing I'd like to see, a good traffic study. And by that, I don't mean the standard American traffic study where we ignore induced traffic and all those impacts.
Exactly.
But somebody who's really thinking cutting-edge traffic, what would it mean?
Right.
But I would say, though, that the bridge is probably not going up as often because sailboats aren't coming up because they can't.
There was a large boat in there recently.
Yeah, but
I went downtown and I saw it. So, no.
But it's less frequent than it used to be because what we used to have are a lot of sailboats coming up on the weekends. I know because I used to come with my dad and we'd stay the weekend in Petaluma. And, of course, you can't do that now because of the dredging situation. So I think I don't know the numbers. We're talking off the tops of our heads.
Right.
But I would bet what your contention that that's a big traffic issue. I think the bridge isn't going up as often because fewer boaters are coming in.
Well, we know that. But if it's dredged, the river is going to be going up. So you don't plan for today. You plan for tomorrow.
Right, right. Well, I wonder if that was taken into account with the planning in regards to SMART. What would be the additional impact of the delays with that bridge?
It has not. And that's why I'm saying that the city has got to address that.
Yeah.
Because it's basic information that is good information that makes the city maybe push for Caulfield because that's going to be a better project. And speaking of Caulfield, I like that COTS is going to be expanding.
Yeah, I just saw that.
I think that's a good thing. And I think that the whole Corporation Yard is being redesigned. And this is all because we have a city manager that has a vision. And I really think that we are very lucky to have gotten Peggy Flynn.
We sure are.
Agreed.
So what is your take generally on how the current council's doing in terms of smart development, sustainable development, the goals you have?
I think we're moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure we're far enough along that path yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would like everyone to see the need for smaller units, six-story. We have some projects, and I talk often with Kevin McDonald, so I'll reference one that he often talks about. I agree with him, but he brings it up more than I do. There's a parcel on Madison Street right behind the Clover Stornetta.
That's a good parcel.
It's a good parcel. It's a parcel through which the bridge into the old, help me out, Janice, the property on the other side of the river.
It was the roofer that owned it, and then they got in all this trouble.
Well, John Barletta has it now.
Yeah, right.
But there's a name applied to it. Anyway, it's the parcel through which a bridge would have gone across the river.
Right.
But the parcel by itself has some good size. It's a place where you can, build effective housing, and it's about a half mile from the train station, maybe a little less, which makes it truly transit-oriented, and yet what we're seeing there is single family.
Mm-hmm.
That's a place where we really should see multifamily, reduced cars. Yes, it's on the edge of walkability of the train station, but not impossibly so.
Well, so when you're talking about a bridge, are you talking about a bridge for cars or pedestrians? For cars. Oh, that's interesting.
It was a proposed riverbend project that would have included the parcel on Madison and the parcel across the river with a bridge connecting them and homes on both sides.
The problem is there's the railroad cross, the railroad tracks bisects that property, and so that's why they don't want to do a grade crossing there, correct?
Correct. Well,
that's why the bridge is proposed.
The parcel on the west side of the river, northwest side of the river, is completely landlocked.
Exactly.
It backs up to the subdivision off of Payran. Yeah. It backs up to the train tracks. It backs up to the river. You have 7 acres of land that there's no legal way to set foot on it, which is really weird. I think I've ever seen that happen in a city before.
Well, there's actually a house in the Payran area that they were talking about taking down, and then that was going to be the roadway in and out of that property also at one time. And so the bridge, I didn't realize about the bridge that they're talking, but who would pay for the bridge?
the developer would need to. Yeah. And the house you're talking about, I can't think of the name of the street in Payland, the loop comes down.
Yeah.
Anyway, there is still a plan to buy a house. In fact, I think it's already owned by...
The city, or...
I'm not sure the city bought it. It might have been Barletta. The house would go down, but it would only mean be an emergency entrance into that landlocked piece of property, because you can't have a piece of property of that size with only one road into it.
Well, it's right by John Chaney's house, and I'm sure John will have something to say about that.
I have no doubt.
Of course. Well, that's, I think it's a property. It's an interesting piece of property, but it's interesting that you'd have to do a bridge. I mean, it would be kind of a nice connection.
Well, but the current proposal in front of the city is only the parcel on the Madison side. It leaves a pathway to get to a bridge. And the comment that I would make, and Kevin McDonald is certainly making, is that's not a place where we should have even medium density. We need to be pushing that density upwards. We need to, even if it's just through ADUs, we need more people living in a place where they can walk to the train station or walk to Washington and catch a bus.
So do you feel as though on that site, are you saying that you feel like we should go to 6 stories on that site?
I think 6 would be too big. Index to single family homes.
Yeah.
But I understand the developer at one point was talking 3.
I think 3 would be very reasonable.
And then because the neighbors next door, he was concerned about the response of those neighbors, he ended up going back to 2.
You could actually do 3 and then tear it down to 2.
Yeah.
I mean, there's ways that could be designed.
I think with a good architect, good land plan, you'd create something neighbors would forget in 5 years they had a problem with it. But we just need to have the courage to push those solutions.
Well, that's a good word, because it really takes courage to make change.
Yes, it does.
And to slow the train down and, really look at the bigger picture. And I'm hoping the city is going to start having some courage. It'll be nice.
I mean, it takes courage from all of us
to
engage in conversations.
And flexibility. Yeah. I mean, if you bought a house under a certain assumption that you'd have a view, you wouldn't have any sun blocked during certain times, and all of a sudden there's a 3-story or 4-story building right next to you, that would be kind of unsettling. It would potentially degrade the value of your place.
Or increase it. Sometimes we always think everything's going to decrease our value.
Sometimes. I mean, everything seems to be going up right now in our area. But I see that side of it as well.
And I agree.
There's a balance there. So there's a big piece of property that a lot of people have been talking about for years that has been, in many people's minds, underutilized, and that would be the fairgrounds. And I wonder if you had any thoughts on what should happen with that. Because the city has been getting $1 a year, so I know that's getting renegotiated. But we're also seeing that as a prime real estate opportunity to develop. People have talked about performing arts centers. There's even a talk about selling the city buildings downtown, selling that land and moving the city stuff over there. Just wonder if you had thoughts on what to do with the fairgrounds.
I have a great many thoughts, many of which I can and shouldn't share. Urban Chat has put together a small committee to go back and reassess what we think the right answers would be. It's a committee that, because it's hard to have some of these conversations publicly, because you end up with protesters showing up outside your door, we are basically a closed group right now.
Right.
I'm only saying that because of your story about the Republicans.
Yeah.
I would be a protester.
Okay, good.
No offense.
I'd actually be a participant. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't want to prejudge where that group's going to go to. I found someone else to chair it.
Right.
But I think some of the things we're looking at are, should some portion of the fairgrounds remain?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I'm hearing is the general community consensus is yes.
Yeah.
The fair is something that truly is a heart of the community.
Yeah, I don't think that's a question. I think everybody wants to continue the fair. The question is how much of that property is devoted to that.
And what do you do with the rest of it?
Yeah.
Does the racetrack survive? I know that's a real hot thought, and I'm not going to say one way or the other.
I will. I think it should go away. Unless you want to convert it to EV races, there's no reason to keep having that. It makes no sense. I don't care what people think of my comment.
There's a lot of people that like that, but I think the bigger problem with the raceway is the toxicity there. I mean, what I'd really like to do is
you mean to redevelop?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure oil's been dumped there for last, 100 years. Oh, and so it is a toxic waste dump that has to be addressed, in my opinion, today, not after we have a plan. And
not to mention that corporation yard that's right behind
the corporation yard, which is the schools, which has old gas tanks that you know are leaking. And so we just need to be honest about what's there. And I think we need to find out, okay, how do you address those?
I mean, it's a really interesting challenge for the city.
It is.
Because that is probably their single biggest asset.
Yeah.
And yet they've got an unknown amount of remediation to
right.
do. It's possible the land effectively has zero value. Because the remediation is the same as the value of cleaned up land.
And this is the, and once you find that that's there, you have to deal with it, right? So if they now nothing's happened because they're not
dealing with it. If you find it, I mean, we know other areas, but it's just a matter of coming up because of the super funds.
Right.
Then money's not there. Yeah. If you had super fund money, you could go ahead and clean up these areas. This is extremely big to clean up.
I think where cleanup really gets triggered is on reconveyance. So
Yeah, that's true, because there was a property I was looking at that was an abandoned gas station that then was a restaurant at one point. It's just up
corner.
Yeah, just up there.
Howard's.
And I was like, oh, that seems great. And it was not very expensive. And then they told me the deal of, but anyone who buys it is going to have to get it cleaned up.
Yeah. Well, even the Haystack side, or Pacifica Development, the Haystack project we were talking about earlier, that land was appraised $2 to $3 million when they first acquired it out of bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. This was during the recession. They only paid $1 million for it because they knew the cost of remediation was there, and the bankruptcy court said, we will allow you to take the cost of remediation off the purchase price.
Yeah. So you kind of said you didn't want to get into too many specifics, but just kind of big picture overview. Do you have a vision for what you'd like to see at the fairgrounds that you can share at all, or you'd rather just be...
Housing.
Okay.
Transit-friendly.
Okay.
I would love to see, and I've had some of these conversations with city folks, a low headway, short headway, time between buses, shuttle connection that picked up the fairgrounds, the train station, downtown. So a very low parking ratio the fairgrounds. So because you could pretty much get on a bus within 10 minutes and get started anywhere you wanted to in the Bay Area. I think we're seeing that kind of development elsewhere in the Bay Area. Yeah. We should be taking a bold step in that direction ourselves.
I do like the fact of moving City Hall there because it's closer to the east and west. And do you have any Eastsiders on this committee?
We do. I can't think who right now, but yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
They're hard to find sometimes, but I know. You're one.
I know. They're hard to find.
Maybe we're not screaming loud enough.
Well, I don't scream loud enough that you don't always get listened. But I do like the idea of maybe putting City Hall there because City Hall property is very valuable, and it really would be a great infill use of that property. And, you just have, it's just a great piece of property downtown.
Yeah. It's pretty valuable, I would imagine.
It is. I think by the time you build a new City Hall, you'll have sucked up whatever value and land you've created on the west side.
Well, you're not talking City Hall. You're going to have to do a police station connected to it, and you need the fire station connected
to it. But
it
might be almost a wash, is what you're saying.
That's
hard to say.
I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised it'd be a wash, but that's intuition. I'd want somebody pushing on it.
I think you're right. I think it's going to cost a lot more. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But I think there's a real value to looking at that.
And as you say, we need a new police station. We need new fire station.
Right. And then you have the police station, which is a great building and a really good asset also that, the city could sell. And so it's not as though you're not...
You missed the last workshop.
Did I? I must have.
Where the fire chief asked specifically where he would want a new fire station to be set at the police station.
I know that. But you know what? He also... He wants 4 fire stations at $10 million each, and that half-cent fire tax doesn't give Petaluma enough money to even get a half of a fire station.
I agree.
And so, we all have visions and dreams, but reality sets in.
Well, the other thing, too, I was thinking about, you were talking about the busing situation, if you wanted to have buses to deal with the induced trips.
But that is a big question. If we further develop the fairgrounds, there's going to be a lot more traffic in that area, right? Because more people will be going to the more frequent things, whether it may be, okay, if there's a police station there, they're going in and out of there.
But you also have Caulfield. Let's not underestimate the Caulfield crossing and its connection to the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
And
so it's another route.
I mean, because, I mean, I never get in traffic like other people in this town do because I take different routes.
Yeah.
When I'm going up B Street, a lot of times I take that one right-hand turn before going over the railroad track.
Yeah.
I go past Cots and then I zip over to Caulfield and I go back to my house. And I'm faster there than going up Washington Street. So there are other routes, and you need to look at the grid for the community. And that's why I love transportation, because if you look at the bigger grid, you know that utilizing Caulfield is going to get a huge bang for your buck. Doing the Caulfield connection into the riverfront is going to be a big bang for your buck. Getting Caltrans to redo Corona because it needs to be seismically upgraded. And when the gas tax, you know, and vehicle license fee went up, what was the, what did they say? Oh, we want to make sure all the money's going to go to our crumbling bridges and roads. Well, this is crumbling. I want it done now. And this is why I supported this.
Yeah.
And so transportation, I think, is really the key. And then you build around the transportation links.
You know, what Jason said a moment ago about more traffic being created by redevelopment of the fairgrounds, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
There would be some.
Yeah.
But if we can create a land use pattern where people who live there can do a lot of their lives by hopping on the shuttle, and if people can get there by riding a shuttle. I live up near Petaluma High.
Yeah.
If there was a bus that I could get downtown and hop onto a shuttle and be at City Hall in 20 minutes, I'd do that rather than driving. But now it's a trip I am taking in my car.
Yeah.
I'm definitely partial to a performing arts center. I would love to see something like a Luther Burbank here.
Like a Rohnert Park and their Spreckles Auditorium.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have anything that can accommodate larger acts. I think the biggest, we've got the Mystic and the Phoenix and what
that's
else?
That's the Memorial Building, which has horrible acoustics.
Yeah. So when I go to shows and I go up to Santa Rosa and, you know, driving to get there. And it seems so funny that where that place is. It's like it's almost feels like it's in the middle of nowhere. And yet I have to go all the way to it. I mean, I'm not complaining. It's not that far, but it'd be nice to have something right in town.
I like the concept, too, and I hear Convention Center mentioned.
Yeah.
But the problem is in most cities under $100,000 or 100,000 people, performing arts centers and convention centers are money losers. Yeah. They may bring people to town. They may help. The bankrolls of the restaurants and the hotels, but they hurt the bankroll at City Hall, and we need to be cautious of falling
That's true.
Let's push the numbers and let's see if it makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. I hate the word has to pencil out because, you know, one year it might pencil out for this project, and the next year, the same project doesn't pencil out. I mean, I'm just so tired of hearing that word, but you do have to figure out what's going to bring the biggest money, and that's why.
Well, a lot of people said sports. I mean, there was the idea
that
the sports arena.
Yeah, Paulson was going to bring this sports center.
It could be a multi-use center. I mean, it could, you know, I just went to the Chase Center in San Francisco, and they have all kinds of things there. They have concerts. They have games. It's pretty amazing. I don't know if you've been to it, but I just saw the Who there. And that was great.
Wow. That would be great. I saw Dead & Company there, and I think it's a horrible place for a concert.
Really?
I do.
Yeah.
It's great for sporting events.
Well, you're right. That is the problem with a multi-use place because Staples Center in L.A. is a similar situation. Great for basketball, but the acoustics. You're right. You're not incorrect. But there are ways you could do it. It's money.
Yeah. Well, it would be nice to see. I mean, really, what could you have down there that actually brings in revenue, a constant revenue stream for the city? So I'm looking forward to see what your group comes up with.
We are hopeful that we'll turn out something that's very useful to the city.
I mean,
it's a process.
When I was on the city council, we were working on this and, you know, talking to the fairgrounds because so this has been going on for a long time. And it never went from A to Z because you couldn't get past A of people not having a vision.
Well, also, as long as there were 15 years remaining on the lease, there just wasn't the urgency. We're now down to three.
This is when they re-up the lease. So this is when the lease only had a short time, and then they re-upped the lease.
No, that was 73 when that happened.
No, there was another time that it was extended.
There was a time David Rabbit brought forward a proposed extension, but it died very quickly.
Okay.
So let's talk more about Urban Chat. What's the structure of Urban Chat? How exactly do you have do you work out of your home? Do you have an office downtown?
Oh, I very much work out of my home.
Okay.
I mean, our annual budget is $2,000, if that.
Okay. Well, it's good because it's a very short commute.
Yes, oh, absolutely. By the stairs.
And you have a board of directors?
We will be adopting bylaws early in 2020 and for the first time have a board. You know, there's 7 or 8 people who are the key components. They'll likely become the board. We are a nonprofit through a connection with Urban Community Partnership. In fact, I see Jason has that up on his website.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's not us, but we are part of them.
Right.
And that gives us, for right now, our nonprofit status. We're looking at another way to have that.
This was like the first link that came up when I typed in your name, by the way. One of the first links.
Oh, I'm officially a board member of that. We're meeting a week from today to discuss the future of Urban Community Partnership, which is sort of the Sonoma County equivalent of Urban Chat.
Right.
But they have had a hard time getting traction, whereas Urban Chat has found a way to put together a number of events.
Well, it's interesting because when we had that brief discussion about YIMBY, if you read what they're saying about it on their site, it's not your take on it.
It's hard to get, because the county has their community development, and it always seems to be hard to really get a foot in.
Well,
part
of the issue with the county is the land they control is not the land anybody who belongs to Urban Chat or Urban Community Partnership wants to see developed. So in some ways, pretty much anything the county might put forward, we're going to say bad idea. And I know JT with Kenniswick very well.
Right.
It's an awkward place, and counties are always going to be.
Yeah.
So Urban Community Partnership has always tended to be more Santa Rosa-focused,
right?
Which, of course, is always the problem between Petaluma and Santa Rosa.
Right.
County organizations focus on Santa Rosa, and we feel left out. So
it's
one reason Urban Chat exists.
we had a council member, Healy, on, and he made it. We were talking about some of the new pressures because of CASA that we have to be building more housing. And balancing that with the urban growth boundary. And what he kind of was alluding to was that we have this pressure, and one way to alleviate that pressure and not go beyond the urban growth boundary would be to do this Rainier development. He was kind of using, and I just wonder if you had a take on that. I thought it was kind of an interesting rationale.
Completely unreasonable.
Yeah.
But I think the first thing we can do is look at Corona Station and say that should be 300 units, not 116 as currently proposed.
Right.
We could look at the smart parcel downtown and say that should be 400 units rather than the maybe 250 is going to come forward. Those two alone, you've now created twice the housing that the Rainier development would.
Oh.
And that's what we should be doing first.
I agree.
Well, that's a good rebuttal.
Absolutely.
I would say. Maybe we should have Healy on, too.
Yeah.
the bottom line is the San Francisco airport and you have the Oakland airport, they're all shoring up for climate change.
Yeah.
And, and so why Petaluma isn't? And then they're doing this silly tiering project upstream that might help some businesses up there, but it's not going to help them long term. No, that's all it is campaign promises. Exactly.
What did we get for those promises?
They're not delivering on all their promises.
So we've been hearing to say, well, we know 2 people on the council.
Yeah.
They're not supportive of the solar that the city is moving forward on.
Well, they're not.
No, they're not. Kathy Miller and Healy aren't. They vote exactly the same. What I'd like to do is get their record and see have they ever voted opposing each other.
Did they vote against it?
Because they thought it was going to cost too much money. But the bottom line is, we have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And I know that there's this young man that keeps getting up and talking about battery packs and the city has decided not to go in that direction.
Right.
And I can totally understand why. But I want to get younger people also involved and hear their opinions because they're much more knowledgeable than I know myself on these issues. And I want to work with people that know.
I mean, the batteries can always be added later, so it's kind of a strange idea. I know some people were, not in favor of it unless they had the battery backups, right?
Well, right, but, that's kind of tricky, too, because they're not really perfected, and so and the city feels as though they probably need something now. And then they'll have generators basically to back up, so the solar will not be able to back up in case of emergencies. Which is two different things we're talking about.
There are. I mean, that's complex. I don't even say that I'm an expert on it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that's why I this young man that keeps getting up at the council meeting, I'm always impressed because he seems he knows what he's talking about. And I'd really like to know more, and I'd like to actually have him on the show.
This is regarding solar.
I'm
drawing a complete blank on his name, which embarrasses me. I do know him. I was actually going to bring Brian's name up.
Yeah.
It's really his best friend, who they look a lot alike.
You know what? I thought the two of them were the same person, and I finally realized this one is this one, and this one's that one.
I've been confused myself.
Thank you.
Well, we are out of time. So, I want to thank Dave for being here. We've got to have you back. We just barely got into the guts of what it is that you're doing.
There was one thing I really meant to bring up, and I failed to do that. So, yes, I would love to be invited back.
That would be great.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. We definitely will have you back.
And maybe actually we can have an outline to really talk about stuff instead of just freewheeling like we do today. Because I'd like to know more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Climate change.
Right.
Climate change.
Yeah. Right?
There's a lot of Urban Chat's doing SCAP. Be aware of the word SCAP.
Okay. I like
it. Okay. Dave Holden, thank you again for being here. Dave is the Executive Director of Petaluma Urban Chat. I am Cindy Thomas, co-hosting the Inside Petaluma Show with Janice Peter Thompson and Jason Davies every Friday from 11 to noon. And we will
next Friday
we are taking the day off, correct?
Yes. Right.
We're all taking the day off, but we will return the following week and entertain you as we always do. And thank you for being here. Go to our Facebook page, KPCA Inside Petaluma. I almost said my other radio show again. And our website is InsidePetaluma.com, where you can listen to all our past shows and a link for this one. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Sounds good.
Everybody, enjoy your weekend.
Thanks.
Bye.
Take care.